So we are holding on Mem Amud Aleph, four lines from the bottom. So we started talking about Madar. We started talking about this idea that you have a problem with, you're going to be having to do a sale or some other kind of thing against your will. So you do a Madar ahead of time to declare that you don't want to do this, and therefore that you're reserving your rights to be mevatelet later. So, Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef da Amitai Vayu. Both Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef say, Loi kasvid en Madar, ela aman de leitzayis dina. You only write a Madar if the person who is bringing about the onus is somebody who doesn't listen to the Beis Din anyway. Because the theory behind it is, if you have Reuven wants a Madar written, if Reuven is claiming that Shimon is forcing me to sell in my field or write a get or whatever all the different possibilities, if only Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef are saying, only if Shimon is the kind of person who we know is not going to listen to Beis Din, if Reuven were to summon him to Beis Din, he wouldn't listen, only then do you write a Madar in that case. Because the theory is, otherwise, just take him to Beis Din. What do you need a Madar written for? Take him to Beis Din, and then so in that there's a few different approaches that the Rishonim have. Is it that we're talking about? First of all, what situation are we talking about over here? Tosfos starts by asking the question: if it's talking about, for example, a get or a matana that we're going to learn on Amud Beis, then any kind of onus is valid enough to be mevatelet. If it's a sale, we're going to see on Amud Beis that it's questionable whether you write a Madar in the case of sale. So Tosfos leaves it as a question. The Rimi Gash says we might be talking about a pshara, for example, you're being forced to accept a certain a pshara, a compromise or something in the din which you wouldn't otherwise want to. Different other Rishonim talk about that. Ramban talks about different possibilities that we may be talking about where you have objective evidence that there's an onus, but nevertheless, though, instead of writing a Madar, take him to Beis Din. Or you could be talking about, for example, if in a case of a sale, let's say, fine, the guy is forcing you, don't write a Madar, fine. You can just say, if you eventually agreed to sell him because of the onus, how can you consider that? How can you consider that an onus? After all, you agreed to sell him in the end. Because one way of looking at it is, eventually you did agree, you didn't want to sell them to begin with,
so
but eventually...
With a gun, and the guy signed eventually, let's say, one way of
looking at it is that if the guy is Tayyip Dina, then the argument is, fine, you were forced to sell him. Take him to Beis Din afterwards, he's somebody who will obey Beis Din anyway, and then take him to Beis Din and clarify in front of Beis Din what happened, that he put a gun or whatever it is. In other words, you shouldn't need a Madar for that purpose. Whereas if he's somebody who loit sayis dina, then fine. You had no choice but to sell him, and now the only way you're going to be able to prove your situation is to have a shtar. So then fine, go ahead and write a shtar. That's one way of looking at it. Again, another way of looking at it is that we're talking about where there isn't necessarily objective evidence that there is an onus. He himself is saying that there's an onus. So therefore, if the person he's talking about is somebody that loit sayis dina, then fine, you know, then you can take him at his word. In fact, the Baal Amar puts it a little bit differently. He says, the vort is, if the guy is loit sayis dina, fine, you can take him at his word that this guy is also doing an onus to him. If the person he's accusing is somebody who sayis dina, somebody who would pay attention to Beis Din anyway, how can the edim write just on your say-so that he's doing an earnest, that he's being a rasha like that? So there's a few different approaches like that. Okay, anyway, that's what Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef say. Abaya v'Rabbah d'Amitavayu, on the other hand, Abaya and Rabbah both say, no, afilo olai v'alecha. No, you can write him a dog regardless, even if the person who's bringing about the earnest is somebody like me or like you, meaning somebody who does listen to Beis Din. It can happen that Beis Din is not available right away, for example, and therefore you can't take him to Beis Din. It can happen also that Ramban adds also, it can be, let's say, for example, the guy may, just because the guy is usually somebody who listens to Beis Din, but he always has the chiruch options, he can always choose at some point not to, so therefore that's a valid reason to write him a jar, even if normally he's somebody who ties Din. Okay. Ami Nahudai. Next, the Nahudai say, a din in this connection of my jar, call my jar to like Sivba. Any Madar, any Shtar Madar, which does not have the following formula written in it, Anan Yadinan Beba Oinsa Diplanya, we, Edim, know what the onus of Pliny was. In other words, we know that it was a complete onus. If you don't write that, Lad Madar, then it's not a valid Madar. If they're just saying that Pliny says that there was an onus, that's not good enough. We can't necessarily take him at his word. They have to write exactly what the form of the onus was. Well, no, they don't have to write. No, they don't have to write. Yeah, that's a witness. They don't have to, actually. They don't have to write the exact form of the onus. They just have to say, we know what the onus is. If we, if this comes to Beis Din, if this shtar, we've witnessed. In other words, we've witnessed what the onus is. We're not just taking the guy at his word, but. And therefore, if it comes to Beis Din, we will be able to explain exactly what the nature of the onus was. It could have been financial, it could have been bodily, it could have been whatever. Yes. Right. Okay, so we have to ask Maidah Demai. What kind of Maidah are we talking about? Because there can be a Maidah with different kinds of things. There can be different kinds of things that different kinds of shtaris that are being written where you write a Maidah. And there's a difference. So in particular, the question is, Rava is saying on Amud Aleph, that Abaya and Rava are saying on Amud Aleph, Afilo Olai Va'alecha, that you can write a Majah regardless, even if we know that the person is usually Tzayis Dinah, because the Beis Din may not be available or whatever. We're going to see, However, we're going to see that it's not so simple. Not always, there are cases where Majah is not really necessary, and there are cases when it's not written. So what do you have to figure out? What is Rava talking about when he's saying that you can write a Majah Afilo Olai Va'alecha? So, Ida Gita Ud Matnasa, are you talking about a Majah that somebody says before he gives a get or before he gives a Matana? Then you don't need. Why should the Edim, so that Hashem...
A Matana be forced.
It can happen. Somebody is forcing you to give him a Matana, but you want to... You could argue that we're going to see at the end of the Amud. There can be a situation, but whatever it is, there can be a situation.
Give me back.
So we have to ask like this. Again, we have two different dinim that we just said. We said Rava was saying that you write a Majah regardless whether the guy is Tzayis Dinah or not, as long as we have valid evidence that there is an onus over here. And we have it now. How Joey is saying that they have to specifically write that we know what kind of onus it was. So therefore, we have to figure out. If we're talking by a get or by a matana, why is that important? Galuya milsa ba'almahi. All it is if you're doing a majah before giving a get or before giving a matana, all it amounts to is you're doing a gilui das. You're saying that I'm not doing it b'rotzen, and a get has to be done b'rotzen, and a matana has to be done b'rotzen. So who cares whether we know the exact kind of onus there was? Yeah. Who cares whether we know the exact circumstances? The Rashbam explains the point of the question a little bit differently. Given that a get and a matana is not something that's given with any kind of compensation, then if he's not giving it, if he's not what?
Kid, no, you get the woman.
Yes. But with a get and a matana, there's no compensation involved. So therefore, if you're doing it willingly, there'd be no reason to give him a job. If you're not doing it willingly, who cares whether we know what the exact onus is? Obviously, the very fact that he's saying a Majah amounts to there was some kind of onus. Otherwise, he just wouldn't be doing it in the first place. So it seems, it seems to be irrelevant. So that's the question. So we can't be talking about a Majah of a get or a Matana, because then there would be no reason to say that the Edim have to know the exact circumstances of the onus. And by the way, there are other Rishonim who go even beyond that. They say, even so, it comes out from what the Rashbam is saying, that at least it is true by the get or by the Matana, there does have to be some kind of onus. It's just the Edim don't necessarily have to know the details. They can take him at his word. But there are Rishonim who learn that actually, no, with a get or a Matana, even if there's no onus whatsoever, just the very fact that the guy is saying, I'm doing a Majah, means that it's Mevatalot, because he has the capability. It's something unilateral. He could be Mevatalot, just, you know.
It's up to the Beis Din at the end of the day to make an evaluation of whether it was or was not real onus.
Why? In the case of it, that's what we're asking. In the case of a get or a matana, why should that be? It's something unilateral.
They cannot decide themselves if it's an onus.
No, but if before he gives a get, he's saying you should know I'm making a Majah.
Yeah.
So according to the Rashbam, at least you have to know there was some kind of onus, otherwise it doesn't work. But according to other Rishonim, you don't even need that. The very fact that he's saying a Majah automatically should be Mevatal,
no.
The get, or because well, otherwise why is he saying anything?
Because the Beis Din has to...
What kind of Beis Din? Why should Beis Din have to evaluate anything? A get is something that has to be given with the husband's rotzin,
right?
And if not, then it's a possible get. And therefore, if he, according to that way of looking at it, if he says anything at all that would be that would call the validity of it into question, then it means he's not giving it meritzono.
His word may not be very, very.
It doesn't matter. It's not. But he's not saying. He's not saying I'm giving it meritzono.
By the way, the Rashbam points out the halacha
that because of this consideration, because of the whole issue of this consideration that a moedah can be mevatel a get. Therefore, before a person gives a get, one of the part of the procedure is that Beis Din will tell him, be mevatel any moedahs or anything that you ever said that could possibly call the validity of the get into question.
Okay. I record that again.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, by the way, moedah is with Eidim again.
Moedah, we said before, has to be in front of two Eidim. Well, we talked yesterday. Is it that it has to be in front of two Eidim, and if not, then it's invalid? Or is it, practically speaking, it should be done in front of Eidim because otherwise you're
okay,
not going to
have Eidim. Are Eidim Biror?
If we say that it can be done technically without Eidim, then it's only Eidim Biror. If we say that it doesn't exist without Eidim, then it's Eidim Kiyum.
Okay, yeah. And that was my thing. Yeah. Now... I'm just piecing all the puzzle pieces all together. Right.
Yeah.
Now, with the macha is also with Eidim.
Yes, and we said the same kind of thing.
Eidim Biror,
as the case may be.
It's also the same mach like
it. Yeah, it's a similar thing.
Now, why could we have Eidim? What about the question of the... Okay, so in the end we have Eidim, even though the Ramah doesn't bring it, but this whole thing...
Well, they're still writing the shtar. They're just not writing it as Eidim. They're writing it as Shluchim. Or no, the other way around. When it comes to a machal, they're writing it as when it comes to a machal, they're writing as Shluchim. Yeah.
Here they're writing it as Eidim. How can they do that?
Because that's what Tosfos says, the special takana that the Chachamim made in order, because otherwise the guy's stuck. Otherwise, there's an onus, and when what he's supposed to do.
Okay, so if we have this answer from the Tosfos. Where does the Nemuchi Yosef come from?
So because he learns differently. He says that even that, he wouldn't say such a takana. You would have to make it work according to the genium of Eidos, and therefore it can't. It can only work as Shlichus.
That Amma is entitled... Nemuchi Yosef do with
he doesn't. He would say, fine, he would say by Madaw, so you write it, he would say by both, by Macha and by Madaw, you write it Mitam Eid. You write it Mitam Shlichus. You write it Mitam Shlichus. The Amma picks and chooses. Exactly.
Right. He sees that A...
Yeah.
And Tosfos sees B, and the Ramah says, okay, the A here and B over here because of this reason.
Okay. Anyway, let's continue. Okay. The Idizvini, if you're going to tell me that you're talking about, so again, by a get or a matana, all you should need is that he says that there was an onus without even specifying what it was, and that should be enough for a valid meidah. Idizvini, if you're talking about a sale, v'ha'amar Rav like us v'nin meidah azvini. But Rava said that you don't write a meidah on sales. Now, where does Rava say that? Later on in the Perek, we're going to revisit the concept of Moedah, and Rava distinguishes over there between, like this, there can be a case where a person is forced to sell, a person is being forced to sell one of his fields, any one of your fields. I'm going to force you to sell me any one of your fields. You pick which one. Then Rava says, well, then that's not considered an onus, because after all, you decided which one to sell. Only if the guy said, Sada Zu, that I want you to sell me this field specifically, that would be considered an onus. So therefore Rava argues like this. But
any
one of your fields. Nevertheless, he's the one who chose. So therefore, in other words, the argument is if it was any sada, then it's not a valid meidah because it's not an onus. If the guy tells him any sada, then you can't have a meidah on that because once you pick one particular field, then that. But if the guy says sada zu, if the guy told you this one field, then you don't need a meidah anyway. You just bring Eidim that there was an onus, and that's that. You don't need a.
There's a bit of a loophole there. That's what you're saying too. That if I say sell me any field for a dollar. You come with a big knife.
Okay, but then I don't remember for sure, but I think they talk about only if he's making you sell it at fair market value. If he makes you sell it for a very low price, no, we're not talking about that. That's different. Okay,
that
would be annoying, but that, we're not talking about that.
What if you only have one field?
Okay, then that's still the zoo. But again, the point is, then you just bring Adam that there was an earnest. You still don't need him my dog.
Okay. The guy doesn't know.
Then you go to Beis Din and it gets straightened out. Okay. Right. So the point is, why would again, we have the Nahadoi telling us that the Eidim need to know the specific onus. We have Rava telling us that that a shtam leidah is written, but what situation is there where you would need a shtam? On the one hand, you would need a shtam leidah, and it would work, but on the other hand, you have to know all the details. It doesn't seem to work, not by get, not by matana, and not by
matana. You shouldn't have to know all the details?
If it's a get or a matana, you shouldn't need to know all the details. The very fact that he said there's an onus should be enough for us to take it in his word. Because anyway, it's biyada, it's a unilateral thing. If it's a mecher, Rava himself holds that certain cases a mecher of maidah is not valid, and other cases you don't need a maidah anyway, because you just need edim that there was an oinus. So where is there a case? We need a shtam maidah. The answer is, modi Rava hecha de onis. Yes, but Rava will agree in a case where, this answers your question, in a case where there was an oinus that he could end up losing the thing altogether. Before we were talking about where he's going to at least get the fair market value of it. But there can be a case where the onus is where he's going to lose the value of it altogether. As in the case of the paradis, of the orchard. Namely, we learned this case in Bava Metzia. A person gave over at his vineyard as a mashkin to somebody else, as a mashkanta de soda, whatever it was, for leplashinin, for 3 years. After the other guy had had it already for 3 years of chazaka, and presumably, I guess, during that time, the original owner never did a macha. Omar, so now the holder of the mashkin, the malva, says, imezabnas limotav, if you are willing to sell me the field, then good, ve'iloy, and if not, kavishna l'shtam mashkanta, then I will hide the shtam mashkanta, v'amin l'kucha hibiyadi, and I will falsely claim that I bought it, and I'll be believed because I have shnei chazaka. Kai gavna kasvin in maidah, that would be an example where we write a maidah, because there he could lose the thing altogether. Now, so the
you go from there, you can go many.
So that the point, so therefore, to answer your question, if you were to say, sell it to me for $1, it's the same kind of thing. Right. In other words, the Maidah we were talking about before, the Talyur of Azabin, the case where they're forcing him to sell is for the fair market value. Right. So he doesn't stand to lose the actual value of the field. But where he stands to lose it, then, so he, and therefore, again, Rava will say that if any Sada, then it doesn't work, and if it's Sada Zu, then you don't need it, you just need Edim of the Oinet. But in the case of this Pardesa, where he stands to actually lose the whole thing, then Rava will agree that a Maidah is valid.
Meaning what?
Meaning, again, if a person is forcing you, sell me one of your fields, but you get to pick which one, then Rava would hold that's not a real Oinet.
Even if he loses the whole value of the field on that?
No! Point. If he loses the whole value of the field, Rava is Maidah, we're saying.
Right.
We're saying, but if it's the case, if it's any sada, and you're the one who picks which field you choose to sell him, then you're not losing. You're actually getting the fair market value. It doesn't matter. Robert would say that doesn't work. Now, we have later on, in the sugya, we're going to have Rav Huna who disagrees with that, and for most of the Rishonim and Paskin like Rav Huna. Okay. Hmm. Now, the question is in the case of this paradis, how do the Edim know what happened over here anyway? You're talking about over here there's a shtar machah written, which again implies the Edim have to know what the exact onus is. How do they know the situation? On the face of it, didn't you have that these two people are talking alone and saying that I have the shtam mashkanta, but if you don't sell me the field, then I'm gonna hide it, et cetera.
Right.
In this last, yeah. So, in that case, if there were Edim there, why would you need a Maidah anyway? You just bring the Edim. So therefore, the Rashbam quotes Rabbeinu Hananel as explaining the story is like this. So this guy again wants to say that what happens is like this. The owner of the vineyard, therefore, goes and informs Edim ahead of time. This guy is trying to steal this vineyard from me. He's trying to falsely claim that he bought it. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you stand over there, and I am going to demand it back. I'm going to tell him, "No, this is my vineyard. 3 years are up. When are you returning it?" The guy is going to claim that you sold it to me.
Right.
He doesn't. He doesn't have a shtar of sale, but he has chazaka. But
yeah,
he has shtar chazaka. Wait. Then what happens is, so then later on, the owner of the orchard continues. How am I going to work this out? Later on, I'm going to go quietly to him without Adam around and tell him one on one. Fine, I'm willing to sell it to you. So he'll say, okay, well then let's write a shtar mechira. So you write a shtar mechira, bring it to me, and I'll give you the money. So he goes to Edim. He goes tells the Edim that see, okay, now, you know, everything's working according to plan. The guy told me to write a shtar mechira. Before he gives the shtar mechira, he says to the edim, now listen, you already heard that this guy claimed he previously bought it from me and asked shnei chazaka. Now I'm writing him the shtar mechira and getting the money from him because he wants to deny it. Ultimately, we're going to come to Beis Din, and you're going to show him up as a liar because you have the original edus where he claimed in my presence that he had previously bought it from me. The only thing that's needed for that to work that Ashbam finishes off is it has to be that the other guy won't think to say that I actually bought it 3 years ago and therefore I already have chazaka and therefore we don't need the new shtar. As long as he doesn't think of that idea, then we're good. We can show him up as a liar.
He bought it and he has chazaka and he doesn't need.
So therefore he doesn't need a new shtar. Doesn't need a new shtar. Okay, right?
If he
thinks to say that, then yeah, he could say that I don't need any new shtar. What do I need a new shtar for? I already bought it from you 3 years ago. But as long as he doesn't think of that, then we're good. Other Rishonim have a bit of a problem with that because, for one thing, it depends on that last detail. If the other guy thinks of that argument, then the whole plan is going to fall apart. So therefore, they explain that actually what it is this is one of those rare cases where you're allowed to have Edim hide out behind a fence or whatever and listen to what's going on, and then later on, usually you have to have the Edim unknown to both parties. But in a rare case like this, they say that this is one of the cases where you can have Edim hiding behind a fence or something and listening to what's going on, and therefore they can later on come to Beis Din and say, we heard that this guy is trying to extort it out of him. Anyway, the bottom line is, therefore, so on the one hand, so you have Edim, and they're writing a Shtar Macha. They're writing a Shtar Macha, but they're, so therefore it all works out. Yeah. Okay.
So that's the only situation.
So that would be a case where Rava agrees that even though it's not necessarily Sadazu, nevertheless it still works as far as Ones and as far as Maida. Yeah. But again, according to Rav Huna, more generally you know the concept of Maida applies more generically. Yeah. Okay. Another din. Amar Rav Yehuda, Hai matanta tmirta lo magbinam la. If you have a hidden matana, meaning if you gave a matana to somebody without wanting it to be publicized, that can't be considered a valid matana. We can't collect with it. We can't take it. Smirta means hidden. Because there can be all kinds of different possibilities that you could be doing with that. You might have already given it to somebody else, and now you're falsely claiming you're going to give it to this person so he'll like you better or whatever. It could be, for example, that you're going to use it as a majah, as we're going to see soon. It can also be some other Rishonim point out. It can be, for example, that you're going to give it to this guy in secret, and then later on you're going to sell it, let's say, to somebody else. Then meanwhile, this other guy is later on going to come and say, hey, he gave it to me first, and then you'll take it back from him and split it, and then you'll have done a whole knunya over there. You'll have done a whole trickery against this third party. So for all those reasons, it doesn't work. Hey, chidame matan tmirta. We're fine. What is considered a hidden matana? Amr Rav Yosef, the Amr Lohu Sadi, if the person who gives the matana says to the witnesses, Zilu itmoru, go hide out someplace, and then write it out, then that's considered a matana tmirta. The Ikadamri, or another version, is Amr Rav Yosef, that no, on the contrary, what's considered a matana tmirta is Deloy Amr Lohu Tasteful Beshukka Ubibir Yasav Atichtabalay. If he does not tell them, sit out in the marketplaces and in the public squares and whatever and write it out in full view of everybody.
If he doesn't say that, then that would be considered
a matana tmirta. So the question is, my benayu, what's the practical distinction? What's the practical nafkamina between these two opinions? It could be benayu stama. The nafkamina would be, what if he just says write it to them? He doesn't tell them hide, but he doesn't tell them do it out in the public marketplace either. Is that considered a matana tmirta or not? According to the first lashon, it's not, because he didn't tell them hide. According to the second lashon, he also didn't tell them to do it out in public. Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Hanan a different girsa, but he disagrees with it, although Tosfos does agree with it, that actually the second lashon is that he says to them, don't sit out. He tells them, don't sit out in the public marketplaces, but on the other hand, he's also not telling them, hide yourselves. He's telling them, fine, don't sit out in full view of everybody, but on the other hand, don't hide either. Does that work or not?
Okay. It's a bit equivalent to
hide. Yeah, it's not really the same thing. No, it just means, you know, don't sit in the middle, you know, right. Don't sit in the middle of 770 and write it. But on the other hand, you don't have to hide yourself. You don't have to go sit up in the attic or something and write it. Okay. Okay. Omar Rav, you my doll chavita. If you do a matana tmirta, it's true it's not a valid matana, but it does work as a maida to mimavatal another. If you were to do another matana or another sale or whatever on this field, then this first matana tmirta would be considered a valid maida against it. Amar Papa. However, the Papa says, Hada Rava La Beferish Itmar El Mitola Itmar. No, you should know that this statement of Rava, this last statement, was not something he said explicitly. It was deduced from a case that came before Rava, and not necessarily is it a valid deduction. Namely, what was the case? Dahu Gavra de Azal Kadushi Itza. There was a man who once went to be Makadish, a woman. Omrele, so she tells him, I'll only be willing to marry you on a condition. E kasavta li kulu nechasich, if you are willing to sign over to me all of your nechasim, havei nalach, then I'm willing to marry you. Ve ilai lai havei nalach, if you don't want to do that, then I don't want to marry you.
I'm like,
the gold digger.
Okay. Would accept that.
Well, so he's infatuated with her. He goes and writes her over all the chasim. However, also break shisha. However, he had an older son from a previous marriage,
and that
son comes and objects. What's going to be with that person? Meaning with me, you're going to leave me high and dry over here. So the guy realizes, you know, he has a point. What should I do? So he says to some Edim, go hide yourselves in Avo Yamina. Avo Yamina literally means the right bank. So it may mean the right bank of the river. It may mean whatever. It's some area, some semi-private area. Some private area. Because, and then write out a shtar matana that I'm giving everything to my son, and that way his shtar will come ahead of the one that's for this woman he's going to marry, and that way the son will be koinet. Also, the Kamei Rava, so the case came.
They put the date, maybe.
No, well, they put dates, obviously. But I guess in the previous part, I guess when we say Ozo Kasvila doesn't necessarily mean he didn't finish writing it yet. He was about to, and then his son came and objected.
Right.
Okay, anyway. Also, the Kamei Rava, so the case came to Rava. Amalahu loy mar kana v'loy mar kana. So Rava says, actually, neither one is kona. The son doesn't work because it's matana tmirta, because it's hidden.
Right.
And with the woman, it doesn't work because the matana tmirta is a maida. So therefore, we could deduce from that that a matana tmirta, that a hidden matana, is good enough, even though it's not a valid matana, it's enough to make a maida against the next one.
Yeah.
However, so manda chaza sovim b'shem dehavi maida l'chapita. So someone who saw this psak din of Rava thought that the reason is because the matana tmirta, the hidden matana, works as a valid maida. However, that's not correct. Rav Papa is saying you inferred incorrectly from what Rava said. In that case, it's obvious that he only did it because of an oinus, because she's not willing to marry her to marry him unless he writes over everything to her. So therefore, he didn't even intend to give her a full fledged matana. His intention was maybe that he'll give her a temporary matana, which will only be in effect until he marries her, and then he'll undo the matana.
Would the marriage be valid?
So actually, the Chazon Ish talks about that, and so do a number of other acronym. They say, evidently, we have to say over here, I mean, she said that I'm only willing to marry you if you sign me over all your nechassim. On the other hand, we have to evidently understand the situation wasn't where she said that it's al tnai, that on condition, and therefore, if the nechassim do not stay in my possession, then it won't be then.
It's nice, isn't it?
But in other words, there's two different things. There can be, I want you to sign me over your nechassim, or there can be, you phrase it, only if all your nechassim permanently become mine. She didn't say that. So in that case, it would work still for him to sign him over to her, and then afterwards, and then temporarily.
It's temporary.
Yeah. And then afterwards, the condition could still be condition. Yeah. Okay.
Which semantics.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so only there, because of the oinus, is it that he's writing. So therefore, you can argue over there that, yes, the second matana is not a matana, not because the first one was a maida for it, not because the maida to the son is considered a maida, not because the matana to the son is considered a maida. It's not. It has no validity at all. But in this case, the second matana itself, the one that he was doing to her, obviously he wasn't doing b'leiv shalom. There's a certain degree of onus. Mind you, some of the Rishonim talk about the idea. This is a little bit different than the onus that we were talking about before, because this is something called onus machmas asmai. After all, I mean, he has the ability to say, okay, so I won't be so infatuated with her, I won't marry her, and I want to give her the matana. Nevertheless, though, it's still considered a type of onus. It's a different type of onus than an external onus where the guy is beating you or doing financial or whatever, but it's still a type of onus. Yeah.
That's for who?
That's the different Rishonim talk about that. aval hacha. But over here, in a regular case of matana smirta, where there's no issue of oynes with the second matana, mao nicha leidelikni or mao lo nicha leidelikni. Obviously, by doing one of them hidden and the other one not, you obviously intend that the first one, which is a matana smirta, should not be a true kinyan. You're only doing it for appearance's sake, and the second one you're doing really, you're that's a valid one. So therefore, only the second one is valid, and the first one is not even considered a medav. Right? The first one we ignore, the matana smirta we ignore altogether.
Previously, the other opinion said both.
So we thought to say that Rava said neither one works, and now we're saying that the one works. The one is not considered a medav for the other. The one is completely tossed out, and the other one is completely valid.
So she gets it. She gets it.
No, in this specific case, because there was an onus, not.
Right. Which one are we talking about?
In a regular case, where somebody does a matana smirta, and later on he goes and gives or sells or whatever the same piece of land or whatever it is, somebody else, Rav Papa is saying that we wouldn't say the first one is considered a madah and therefore the second one is invalid. No, the first one is completely ignored, and the second one is a valid matana or matana.
And in the case of
yeah.
it's just we know that it's done. Was not to give it to her.
Right.
So and in the case
right.
of the woman, it wouldn't
In the case
work.
Of the woman, it wouldn't work, but that's for a different reason, because there's oinus over there. The only reason he did the matanat smirta is because of the oinus.
A very slight degree of oinus on top of that.
Okay, but nevertheless, an oinus all the same. Okay. Ibo'ilahu, so now we have yet another question. Stomamai, what about if you write it b'stam? Now, so the Rashbam explains that the question is, again, this is going back to, we had two different versions of what Rabbi Yosef said, what a matana smirta is. Is it only if he explicitly told them hide out, or is it even if he didn't, or is it anything short of telling them go sit in the public spaces and do it? So what if he writes stam after all? We have to know what the halacha is between
not
those
without being told
one way or the other. Is it considered matana smirta or not? Then the Rashbam brings another possibility that maybe we would say that a matana smirta is not considered a majah, but maybe a regular matana would that be considered a majah? The Rashbam says he doesn't like that explanation. Anyway, Ravina Amar Lo Chashina. So therefore, we're left with the first explanation. That's Stomamai. The question is, if you do a matana without specifying that they need to hide out, but also without specifying that they should sit out in the public and do it, what is it? Ravina Amar Lo Chashina. Ravina says we're not concerned. It's not a matana smirta. It's a fully valid matana. Rav Ashi Amar Chashina. Rav Ashi says we are concerned that it might be a matana smirta. So therefore, and the halacha is we are choshesh. Meaning, when we say we're choshesh, by the way, we mean it's a bit of a suffix. We can't say that it's a valid matana to begin with. However, if the guy ended up taking it, you can't get it back from him because you have a suffix. So therefore, you leave it wherever it is. Therefore, you leave it wherever it is right now. Now, Tosfos talks about, and also the Rashbam talks about briefly, there is a difference. Because of what the Gemara is saying over here, eventually they developed the minhag to always write, when you're writing a matana, to write, sit out in the public squares and the marketplaces and write and whenever and write out the shtar. Once that became the standard formula to write, then even if it wasn't written specifically that way,
to prevent a matana smirta.
But eventually, once that became the standard way of doing things, then even if you have a shtar which doesn't explicitly say that, it's still not considered a matana smirta. Because then only if he says
no, that doesn't say what.
Again, eventually the minhag developed. In the times of the Gemara, there wasn't any specific minhag what to write in a shtar matana or not. Different people wrote different ways. Eventually, based on this Gemara, the minhag developed to always write that I want you to sit out in public and do it. Once that is done, then that became the default, that became the standard, and therefore once that happens, then at that point, even if a person does not write that in his shtar, doesn't mean it's a matana smirta, it just means that they left out that formula. It's sort of like a chayis tos sefer in a certain sense. And therefore, in that sense, so now the din is a little bit different. So stomamai is, in fact, we consider it stoma. If it wasn't written in the shtar, the halacha is, in fact, it is valid. Because we assume they just forgot to write it in, but not that they specifically meant it to be a matana smirta.
So now you need kavana.
So now, yeah. So now, unless you specifically say that it's a matana smirta, then it's not. Yeah. Mishnah says, Kol chazaka she'eni matayna eini chazaka. Any chazaka, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, any chazaka that does not come along with a taina, where you don't have an explanation of what you're doing in this place, is not considered a chazaka. And by the way, the Rashbam says this isn't only talking about chazaka like we've been talking about all this time, the chazaka of 3 years on property or whatever. It also includes, for example, the Rashbam says, if you have, now we learned back in the first perek, you can have a chazaka on, for example, that you established a chazaka that you're going to be able to allow, that you're going to be able to have your beams resting on the other guy's wall or whatever without him objecting. There, the Rashbam learns you don't need 3 years for that, but you do also need a taina. You can't just say, well, okay, you didn't object, so therefore you have to have some kind of evidence that he actually gave you permission to do that. We talked about then actually there's a major argument among the Rishonim about the two different aspects of that. First of all, do you need 3 years or not for that kind of thing? Second of all, do you need a taina for that kind of thing or not? There are Rishonim who learn that no. When you say kol chazaka sheinim a taina, we don't mean that kind of chazaka. We just mean a chazaka of karka or whatever, or metalpilin or whatever. It doesn't mean a chazaka of like that, like to be able to rescue beams. You don't necessarily need a taina for that, as long as, according to many Rishonim, as the Rambam holds that way, as long as the guy wasn't mocha one time, then that's enough, and you establish a chazaka. You have to be mocha right away, otherwise he loses any rights to be mocha later. Okay.
And it doesn't even have to be 3 years?
According to the Rambam, it also doesn't have to be 3 years. Again, there are Rishonim who learn, according to the Rambam, nothing. If the guy's not mocha the first time. Yeah, whatever. If he's not mocha, right away, as soon as he has the opportunity. Yeah, then you didn't have the opportunity. That's different. Yeah. Okay. All right. Ketzad. So what does it mean, a chazaka she'eni matayna? Omer lo ma'ata oisa b'seich shali. If one person comes to the other and says, what are you doing in my property? And the other one says, okay, well, nobody told me that it belongs to you. Ain't a chazaka. That's not a chazaka. Now, right. Now, obviously, the question is pshita, and the Gemara is going to take that out. Yeah. On the other hand, Shemachautali, but he argues that you sold it to me, Shemachautali Matana, you gave it to me as a gift, or Avicha Machrali, Avicha Nasnali Matana, or your father sold it to me, you gave it to me as a gift, I raise a chazaka, that's considered a taina, and then you have a valid chazaka.
You have to prove it.
You have to have, we'll see in the Gemara, but you have to have proof of your chazaka. To what extent you have to have
the taina?
To what extent you have to have proof of the taina, we'll see in the Gemara, wait. Now, if you're coming as Yerusha, you're saying that I inherited it from my father, where he had a chazaka on it when he died, then you don't need any further taina. You don't need to say how he originally got it, because you can't expect. The son doesn't always know how his father came into possession of a certain piece of property. So then it's called, as we learned earlier in the Perek, Toinin L'Yorish. We, Beistin, will argue on his behalf that his father must have had a valid chazaka in it, and if you want to say otherwise, you, the ma'arer, are going to have to bring proof to the contrary. The Gemara starts out, shita. Isn't it obvious if he has no taina that's not a chazaka? Now, Tosfos says that actually maybe it's not so pshita. Didn't we learn at the beginning of the parak the possibility when we talked about that we learned chazaka from Shodan Board that maybe you don't need a taina over there.
Right.
So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is that the question maybe over here according to the Chachamim. Yeah, according to Rabbi Shmuel, maybe it's not so pshita, but according to the Chachamim, who said that you learn it from because up to 3 years a person is careful with a shtar or whatever, then yeah. Okay. The answer is Ma'u de Tema Hai Gavra Mizban Zavnale, because you might answer, maybe what happened was the other person, the Ma'ara, really did sell him this land. Ushtara Havale Vihirka, the Lekeach, the Machzik now, had a shtar, but he lost it. So why did he say such a strange thing? Why did he say nobody ever told me? Rather than say you sold it to me and etc. Sava, because he may not know the din. Iyamina mizban zavnali hayara. If I say that you sold me this land, amulei achvishtara. He may well tell me, show me your shtar. He may not know the din of chazaka. So he may think that even if it's 5, 6, 7 years later, I'm still obligated to keep my shtar, and if I don't, then I'm in trouble. Therefore, I better make this claim. So therefore, hilkach leimalei. So hilkach leimalei anan duma shtara havelachavir. Because you would think maybe we Beistin should tell him that is it possible maybe you had a shtar and you lost it. You would think goinzep sach picha leilam. Who maybe this is one of those cases like the pasuk says, open up your mouth for the mute. Meaning there are certain cases when a person parsha can't put his claim together validly at Beistin, then Beistin is obligated to help him out a little bit. Now, they have to be careful because we learn in Pirkei Avos, I'll pass at Masal Kerech Adayanim. Don't be like a lawyer coaching him what to say. But there's a fine line over there. But there are cases where we say Psach Picha Le'ilim. You would think this is one of those cases. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush of the Mishnah. We don't do that. If he himself, now, the Rashbam points out, if he himself comes up with that argument,
the question that
if the machzik himself comes up with this idea, he says, the only reason I said that nobody told me is because I was afraid that otherwise you're going to tell me to say that you're going to tell me to pull out my shtar, that would be a valid argument. And Beis Din does have to give that queen.
If it would what?
Again, the case of the Mishnah is Reuven comes to Shimon and says, my baris b'hayar, what are you doing in this land? Shimon starts off by saying, well, nobody told me that it's yours, so I was machzik in it. So Reuven comes to Beis Din to say, well, that's not a taina, you need to get out of here. If Shimon then himself, now Beis Din will not volunteer on Shimon's behalf, oh, you may be saying that because you thought you need a shtar forever, et cetera, et cetera. But if Shimon himself comes up with that argument, the reason why I said that is because I didn't realize at the time that after 3 years I have chazaka and I don't need a shtar, then Beis Din has to accept that taina. That is considered a valid taina. It's not considered contradicting this previous taina because it's explaining why did I say that? Because
he didn't know.
Yeah.
Right. That's fair.
Okay. But Beis Din will not initiate. Yeah, he did have a shtar. He lost it. Yeah. Fine. But he didn't know that.
That was the way he started.
Right.
So he can totally tell for that.
Yeah. So therefore, Beis Din will not volunteer this on his behalf. That's the point of the Mishnah. But if he comes up with that argument on his own, then we have to give it
credit. Right. So they say, did you have a shtar?
So the Gemara says Anav Simon. Now we're going to have a couple of cases that relate to our Mishnah, where the Simon for them is Anav. It's a little hard to understand how exactly the Simon works. You have Rav Onan, you have Rav Kahana, and you have the Ayin of Onan, you have maybe the Nun of Kahana, and then you have the cases over here where there was Bidka, where there was a flood that washed away the boundary markers or whatever. So maybe that's what the Beis is, or maybe it's really supposed to be Ayin Nun Chof because you have Rav Kahana later. Okay, anyway, whatever.
Okay.
Rav
Onan, I don't hear so much
of him. Yeah, he comes up every now and then. He was one of the Talmidim of Shmuel. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So Rav Onan Shokol Bidka Ba'are. Rav Onan, one time there was a flood in his land, so therefore it washed away the wall, it washed away the mechitza between his field and the next guy's field. Now later on, once the flood subsided, they didn't know exactly where the wall had been. Also Hoder Gudah Ba'are B'Chavre. So when they rebuilt the wall, he wound up building it on the neighbor's property without realizing. Because it had been washed away. Also, the Kamei of Nachman. Eventually, the other guy figured out that his land is smaller than it was before. So they came. The other guy realized that now my field is smaller.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. No, come on, it was a few feet smaller, but whatever. Yeah. Okay. So they came to Rav Nachman, Amalei, so Rav Nachman said to Rav Onan, Zilhader, go return it to him. You're going to have to tear down the wall and build a new wall in the right place. So Rav Onan asked, why? Why? I made a chazaka, meaning, as the Gemara is going to say soon, the guy actually helped me build the wall. Isn't that the equivalent of him saying, make a chazaka on this land? And I already had the chazaka there.
House, no?
But that's what we're going to get to. Wait. But the point of the matter is, Rav Onan is arguing that never mind the question of mechila. There's the matter of chazaka. Again, so far we've been talking about that there's a chazaka of 3 years.
Right.
However, we learned a couple of mishnayos ago. We had what Rav Yehuda said about the reason behind the 3 years is because if the guy is in Aspamia, then the tater will take a year for the news to reach him, et cetera, et cetera. But the implication is, Rav Onan is understanding Rav Yehuda. We didn't really talk about this over there, but Rav Onan is understanding Rav Yehuda to be making another point as well. Why do you need 3 years? Because that's the maximum amount of time it could take for the guy to come back and do a machal. However, if let's say the guy is not in Espana, let's say the guy is right here in town, then you should be able to make a chazaka much sooner. You do it b'fanav, even for one day, and he's not marcha, then you should have a chazaka. So Rav Onan is arguing on that basis, therefore, I have a chazaka over here. It was in the other guy's presence. He even helped me build the wall. But at any rate, he told me it's the equivalent of telling me, go
so
make a chazaka.
Before the discussion on the time of chazaka, basically.
Yeah, he's saying, in other words, I had.
Chazaka is something immediate.
Yeah, he's arguing. Rav Onan is arguing. The guy knew that I'm being machzik in this land. He didn't object. I should have an immediate chazaka.
But perhaps he's also arguing that, no, I put the wall exactly in the right place.
Yeah, but Rav Onan is not arguing that. He knows that it's true.
That
now that this case is coming to Beis Din, yeah, he realizes he put it in the wrong place.
Know that.
Because
if
the other guy is taking him to Beis Din, they're obviously not arguing on the actual facts. They can measure. They can see.
That's what I think.
No.
I would have thought it wouldn't fit.
Originally, obviously, Ravonin didn't deliberately go to take part of the other guy's property. They built the wall thinking that it was in the right place. Later on, the guy measures his property. I used to be able to fit a football field over here. Now I can't quite. So I realize that all of a sudden, there a couple of feet seems to have been shaved off or something. Yeah, you know. Anyway. Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, come on, so who are you thinking like to say that that should be a chazakah? To Rav Yehuda or Rav Yishmael? You're thinking that that should be like Rav Yehuda and Rav Yishmael, do Amakol b'fonav la'altar have a chazakah? Who they say that if you do it b'fonav, then it can be an immediate chazakah. Rav Yehuda we have in the previous Mishnah. Rav Yishmael we have later on towards the end of the Perek. We have a case over there involving a chazakah involving windows looking over the other guy's chazakah. And Rabbi Shmuel says that it was b'fonav, and it's la'alta have a chazakah. So you want to say like them? Okay, let's tell chazakah b'sayu. The halach is not like Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda.
Are you saying that again?
Rabbi Nachman is saying to Rabbi Anan, what are you thinking? You're going according to Adaf Yachad, you can't do that. Amalei, so now Rabbi Anan says, okay, but I have another argument. But the guy was meichel to me. I have a taina over here because he was machnemi this land, because I have edim that he actually helped me build the wall. So therefore, he was machnemi that land. He went and helped me build the wall. So obviously, he was meichel me that piece of land. Amalei, sort of Nachman tells him, like you said, mechila b'tov. See, that was a mechila that was done based on a mistake. He didn't realize that it's in the wrong. He didn't realize it's in the wrong place. Yeah, yeah. And after all, you yourself, if you had known it's in the wrong place, you wouldn't have built. If you yourself knew that you're building it to a few feet further out or whatever, you wouldn't have done it. You didn't mean to
give credit.
Yeah, you don't mean to. You wouldn't have done that.
Okay.
So you also made a mistake. Just as you didn't know, who namu lo have a yada, he also didn't know, and therefore it can't be considered. Therefore, it can't be considered a valid mechila. Okay,
Tosfos.
So Tosfos discusses that a little bit, but it's not so simple actually. That Rav Nachman himself says that in certain cases mechila can be betos, but Tosfos says that. There's other Gemaras, for example. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, for example, where Rav Nachman says that where Rav Nachman seems to say over there that Mechila B'Tos is Mechila. That was a case over there involving where we had a case of what do you have? Somebody sold Peres Deco to what was the case over there? I don't know. We could look it up, I guess, but. Where's the nearest Bava Metzia? Okay, so you have, what was the situation over there? That a person, So you have a person sell Peres Dekel to somebody else, and Rav Nachman says that he can change his mind later because he did do the Kinyan before they were Bola Olam. But Rav Nachman agrees that if the guy already took the fruit and ate it, then Loimach Kinyan Mine, we don't take it away from him because in that case, it's basically on the face of it, it's Mechila B'Tos. It's Mechila because he was Moichel to him. He thought that it was a valid sale. But it turns out it was betos. It wasn't really a valid sale because he has the ability to undo it. Nevertheless, though, it's still considered mechila. Okay, so Tosfos talks about a little bit that maybe in general Rav Nachman does hold that maybe over there it's not considered mechila betos because he wasn't planning to change his mind even if he knew he could have because he wants to be considered an honest person. But in general, he would agree Okay. Let's continue a little further, and then, if you guys have to go, then fine.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Another case. Rav Kahana, right? The same kind of thing happened to Rav Kahana. There was a flood in his land. He also rebuilt the wall in the wrong place, where it wasn't his property. And the case came to Rav Yehuda. So the other guy brought two different agents. He brought two individual edim to testify how far it had been moved. Chad amatati.
We need a second case on the same.
Because topic. We're going to see it's not quite the same. Chad amatati utziyosaol. The one aide testified that the wall had been moved in two rows, meaning two furrows of land, or some of the rishonim say that utziyosa means rows of grapevines. But chad amatwas utziyosaol. The other one says it was three. So they're contradicting each other.
Two rows or three rows?
Two rows or three rows. Amalei, so Rabbi Huda tells Rabbi Hanna.
Would be okay?
No, the point is, they're arguing over how far in it is. So how much does he have to move the wall back? Two or three. Amalei, so Rabbi Huda tells him, Zil Shalom Tauti Migotlas. Go, it's true, the guy doesn't have two adim that it was three rows. He can't force you to move it three rows back, but he can force you to move it two rows back because the two of them agree that it was at least two. Amalei, so Rav Gahana says, Kaman, who are you paskining like Rav Shimon Elazar? Are you paskining in that like Rav Shimon Elazar? Yes, we're learning a brayso. So Amar Rav Shimon Elazar, Lanechoko, Beshamay, Beshilol, Al Shneki to Edim. Beshamay and Beshilol, who disagree, for example, we had a Nazir, we had a case over there where different Edim say how much a person had declared Nazirus or whatever. So Beshamay and Beshilol do not disagree. If you have two sets of Edim, meaning four Edim altogether, not like in our case we had two, but you four sets at four edim altogether, two sets. Sha'achas and meres mona va'achas and meres masayim. If one says that Reuben let Shimon 100 zulas, and the other one says 200, sheyesh b'chlam masayim mona, then for sure we accept it. We say that he's obligated to pay 100 because 200 includes 100. So therefore, in other words, we don't say the second pair is not contradicting the first pair. They're adding something. In other words, fine. When it comes to the second mona, fine. You have two against two. You can't prove which one are the truthful ones. So therefore, but they both agree on the first one. So Bisham and Bissell would both agree to that. Almanach, look, or Al-Kat Acha. Bisham and Bissell would disagree if you have one single pair of Edim. She'echad oim mona ve'echad oim masayim. One says that he owes him 100. One says he owes him 200. She'bisham oim nechok oidusan. Where Beit Shammai would say that therefore, okay, the Aedus is divided. One is saying 100, one is saying 200. They're contradicting each other. We don't have a valid Aedus. Or Bissilulam, Yesh Bechlam Mosayim Mana. And Bissil also says that Yesh Bechlam Mosayim Mana. So therefore, you collect 100. So therefore, now, but this is Rav Shimon Elazar's explanation of what Beit Hillel holds. The Chachamim evidently disagree with that. The Chachamim evidently disagree and say that that's not what Beit Hillel holds. So therefore, so Rav Kahana is saying to Rav Yehuda, you're telling me that I should have to move the fence back two rows. And over here, evidently, unlike in the previous case, I guess, where Rav Onan agreed that the fence was wrongly placed, he was just arguing he had a chazak on it. Here, evidently, they were disagreeing on whether it was actually wrongly placed or not.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's saying that.
So he's saying only Rav Shimon Elazar holds. That's how Basila holds.
Right.
Since when is the halacha like a daf yachad, like a shem and a lazo? The halacha should be like a chachamim. That's not what they will say. That they would agree in that case, nechok eidus, and you don't have a valid eidus, because you don't have one single set of eidim that are saying the same thing. Why should I have to move it at all? The guy doesn't have any eidim. Amalei, I misread it. So the question is, Kaman, he asked him, who is that like? And he answered him, kirishim and a lazo, and he quotes in this braisa that shem and a lazo said. Amalei, so Rav Kahana is not satisfied with that. Okay, you're saying like Rav Shimon Elazar. Who says the halacha is like him? I will be able to bring you a letter from Eretz Yisrael, from the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, that says that the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Elazar. Amalei, so Rav Yehuda tells him, okay, l'chitesi, fine. When you bring such a letter, we'll deal with it. Meanwhile, I'm passing like this according to Rav Shimon Elazar. You find that the Chachamim and Eretz Yisrael disagree. Fine, then we'll go back. We'll bring it back to Beis Din over here and see if the case has, and see if the verdict has to be reversed. But meanwhile, we can pass in halacha this way. And they didn't
reserve the case.
Yes,
until the other one breaks the letter.
No. So in fact, that's the poskim say based on this that yes, if you have a Beis Din which is a reputable Beis Din and is going to reverse themselves if other evidence is brought, then yes, you judge the case right now as it is, and later on, if new evidence is brought, new post-scheme or whatever are brought, then you'll redeal with it. But you can't say we're going to hold off the case until that's brought. Yes.
What happened?
So that's it. History doesn't record what happened after that.
We don't know.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We'll continue tomorrow. That's the same.